Hey, just a quick warning before we dive into this Mermaid Movie Club selection. This discussion includes descriptions of violence and gore, including violence against animals and also gun violence. So if that's not something you want to hear about, then maybe skip this episode. Don't worry, I wouldn't be bothered if you chose to skip it. I want you to be comfortable. And if that doesn't make you comfortable, then I don't want to subject you to it. I totally get it. Now, if you think you can handle that, then feel free to continue. I do try to not get too graphic about it, but it is a part of this movie, and it's not easy to look at. You have been warned. Your discretion advised and all that. Anyway, take it away, pre-episodes, Andrea. Today on the Mermaid Movie Club, mermaids versus corporate interest. Will mermaid assassin Sean be successful in taking out a greedy business tycoon who seeks to destroy her people? Can she do it without falling in love with the guy? Let's find out in this environmental tale. Tale. Get it? It's mermaid humor. I'm Mermaid's Andrea. Let's dive in to the mermaid. Greetings and salutations! We're back! It's been a long time coming, but we're here now. If you got that reference, please tweet me. I will shout you out in the next episode. Anyway, welcome back to the Mermaid Movie Club, a celebration of Merfolk and media. I am Mermaid's Andrea, just as I said at the top, your mermaid with the mostest. Mermaid Media Maven. I'm trying to come up with like a title for myself, and I've been at this for like a little bit now, and I still can't come up with it. So if you can help me come up with one, please message me and I'll shout you out on that as well. if you're a first time listener to this show, this is a show that talks about mermaid movies in great detail, mostly because I don't know when to shut up, and all the things around them, such as symbolism, mythology, history, sociology, and of course my own personal opinions. I know, mermaid movies are super niche. Like, girl, why that specifically? Well, I can just say, go back and listen to the first episode titled Welcome to the Mermaid Movie Club, because it's like 10 minutes long and tells you most of what you need to know. But perhaps the best answer I can offer is, because I wanna. Quite simple. I also open up the discussion on social media. You are free to message me on any of my socials, which are in the show notes, and also the Anchor voice message box if you are using the Anchor app. Of course, because I somehow still have to preface this in this day and age, don't be a jerk. I can't believe I still have to say this because the internet makes some of y'all real brave. Why am I doing that Dr. Cox thing? Like the really brave. Anyway, first timers, welcome. I'm glad you're here. Settle in, make yourselves comfortable, because we're getting into a real wild one today. The movie we're talking about today is one that I have wanted to cover from the get-go. Like, as soon as I decided I wanted to do mermaid content, this was a movie I wanted to talk about. I think it's the first R-rated movie that we're covering on this. It's not a very old movie by any means, but it is a favorite of mine. It is the 2016 mega hit Chinese film, The Mermaid. It's directed by the legendary director Stephen Chow. He directed Shaolin Soccer from 2001, Kung Fu Hustle from 2004. And before that, he was actually an actor, and he appears in a lot of the films that he directs, not in this one, and I think there's a few more after this that he's not in. And I couldn't tell you why that is, but I just thought that was an interesting thing to make note of. This film stars, and I'm sorry about the pronunciation of some of these. They're not going to be accurate, of course. This film stars Lin Yun as Shan, the titular mermaid, Deng Chao as Liu Shan, Xiao Lo as the octopus, and Zhang Yuki as Ruolan. This is the first film for Lin Yun, who is also known as Jelly Lin, who would later go on to appear in 2017's Journey to the West, The Demons Strike Back, which was produced by Stephen Chow in addition to Sui Hark. Zhang Yuki was also in CJ7 and Shaolin Girl, both of which were produced by Chow. Xiao Lo was in that first Journey to the West film that Chow did in 2013 called Journey to the West Conquering the Demons. Basically, what I'm saying is, directors often like to rehire actors they've worked with in the past on future works. Martin Scorsese does it, Ryan Murphy does it, the Russo brothers do it, Tim Burton does it. It's just standard operating procedure. Nothing wrong with that. I am also saying that this is the film that put Lin Yun on the map, because she did a lot of stuff after this. The Mermaid, upon its release in February of 2016, set records right out of the gate. It grossed $120 million in its opening weekend alone, making it one of the biggest opening weekends in Chinese cinematic history, in addition to one of the highest grossing films of all time in China. I think at one point it did hold the number one spot, but that has since been taken over by 2017's Wolf Warrior 2, and they say the sequels are usually not as good. What I'm saying is, don't underestimate the power of mermaids at the box office. Friendly reminder that The Little Mermaid literally saved Walt Disney Studios from essentially collapsing in the late 80s and early 90s. Just putting that out there. And when I cover The Little Mermaid more in depth, I'm going to talk about that. I'm definitely going to talk about that because that's a really, really interesting note about it. But we're not talking about The Little Mermaid today. We're talking about The Mermaid. The Mermaid. There's a the. So that's important. Now, the best way I can summarize this film is that a mermaid named Shan is sent to assassinate a playboy business tycoon by the name of Lu Shan. I'm not getting it right at all. Is he's developing an ocean reclamation project that threatens her fellow merfolk. However, Shan falls in love with Lu Shan along the way. It's a romance. There's a bit of action in it, but I feel like more than anything, it's a comedy with just utter bizarro visuals, some slapstick, some visual gags. It's just everything and the kitchen sink, like five kitchen sinks. And first time I watched this, I was expecting like cheesy romance with some questionable CGI, and I was like, half right. But I did not expect it to be as off the wall and cleverly funny as it was, because a lot of the mermaid comedies I'd seen up to that point took comedy in more of like a classical rom-com type of fashion, like say Splash or Aquamarine. I know there's the lore, which is I've heard about the same level of bonkers as this, but I want to say that leans more horror. I haven't watched it yet, but mark my words, it is on my list. I do want to talk about that film, absolutely. But today, we're going to be talking about The Mermaid. And without further ado, let's dive in. The opening sequences kind of set the stage for the conflict at hand. There's a lot of imagery here, like there's smokestacks and there's trees being cut down in forests, and that really quickly shifts to some rather graphic images of sea life being brutalized, cut open, birds drenched in oil. It's hard to look at. So we kind of know that at the root of the conflict, there is an environmental issue. And that's to be inferred when you look at the synopsis, like I was talking about at the top. But, oh man, I would fast forward through that if you don't want to look at that. I think there's more later on, though. So it just seems kind of inescapable. So we're looking at that, and then we see this large ball. Looks like kind of one of those scuba helmets, kind of. And it's like blasting something. It drops into the ocean and like blasts something. And all the fish around it are going like totally, absolutely nuts. So there's something, some kind of disruption of the natural ecosystem here. But I think we have to wait to find out what's really going on. Enter the Museum of World Exotic Animals. We've got this guy who runs the joint, and he's passing off all these everyday animals as, well, being more exotic than they really are. I've never watched Tiger King, so I can't compare it to Tiger King. His T-Rex is a gecko backlit to look like a T-Rex. His tiger is a painted dog, and his quote-unquote Batman is a mannequin in a cape with chicken wings for ears, which one of the guests actually eats one of the chicken wings, and that's just an example of, like, the bonkers comedy in this movie. He does show his guests a mermaid initially, but it appears to be a toddler Elsa doll stuffed halfway into the mouth of a dried out fish. A little bit Fiji mermaid. I'll let you Google that because I don't want to get too much into the concept of the Fiji mermaid because we will be here all day. Now, the whole concept of this museum is a bit Gravity Falls. If you're familiar with Gravity Falls, then you know what I'm talking about. This guy's Grunkle Stan running the Mystery Shack. Under pressure, he reveals his quote-unquote real mermaid, which is a guy in a kind of cheap-looking costume hanging out in a bathtub. And he says, "I'm just trying to make a living here. Take a picture with me." And I feel like that part might not sit well with people who actually make a living as performing mermaids, as it feels like it's kind of a jab. But I guess it's up to you. Personally, I thought it was kind of funny. So, cut to, there is an auction. And I think I missed what the auction is for, but I can only assume, based on the image on the monitor, that it's for some kind of seaside property. I can't pinpoint where exactly this is because geography is not my strong suit. This guy, Lu Shan, wins the auction for 20.8 billion, I'll assume it was in yuan, which is the official currency in China. But it's never stated what kind of currency is being used. A journalist is chasing him up the escalator, and she's asking him why he bid 300% more than the area is worth, and please don't ask me to do that math because that was always the part I was bad at. And he's putting it toward this project called Green Gulf, which is supposedly an ecologically friendly project. But I've got trust issues with this. I don't know. I found, just based on, like, real life, you can't always trust people with a lot of money. I mean, just, again, as I'm recording this, we're still in the middle of this corona pandemic disaster. And I'm learning very quickly that the people with money, you know, they can pay like lip service to activism or whatever, but they're not always going to put their money where their mouth is. Anyway, let's move on. There's a fancy party and it's celebrating Lushan's big success. And there's all these pretty girls and mermaid dancers and the like. And suddenly one of the mermaid dancers pops up from the pool. She wants to talk to Lushan. She's like totally obsessed with the guy. So one of the security guards notices that she's in there unauthorized. And suddenly the guards just start throwing her around like she's a rag doll. That's kind of not fun to watch because she seems pretty defenseless. So she reveals that her name is Shan. She's ridiculously attracted to Lushan, and she gives him her phone number. Security guards escort her away. She scurries away in her big yellow skater sneakers under her mermaid costume, and we move on. And now this is where the Green Gulf Project is being presented to shareholders, where it's being described as like an aquarium theme park situation, similar in scale to Disneyland. Now, as I was watching that, I was like, which Disneyland? Which one? I've never been at any Disney park but the one here in Florida, and I'm told that the park in Anaheim is smaller, or maybe it's the castle that's smaller. West Coasters, feel free to roast me over this inaccuracy. Anyway, it's revealed that part of the Green Gulf Project is these sonar transmitters. This is a ball we saw dropped into the ocean in the beginning. The purpose of the sonar transmitters is to literally kill any living organisms that would get in the way of the project's development. The presenter pretty specifically says dolphins, but come on, dolphins can't be the only thing out there. One of the presenters is way too happy about killing a goldfish to demonstrate the sonar's power, to the point where she takes a picture with the bloody tank. She is creepy. I do not like her. She even talks in like this baby voice, and she says after the fish dies, "Game over." Oh my Neptune. She's creepy. Take her away. Like, she sounds like a Poppy video. I'm going to see and hear her in my nightmares. Oh, God. So now we're heading back to the mermaid hideout. This, I think, is the first time we're seeing the mermaid hideout. What it is, it's like an abandoned shipwreck in where the Green Gulf site is. And they're all kind of living in this abandoned shipwreck. This is where Shan finally removes the layers of clothing that were making her appear human, right down to like latex legs. I mean, she missed no details here, but that was not something I was expecting at all. They're like prosthetic legs. I did not expect that at all. So the whole time, Shan has been walking on her little tail fins. When I told you this movie was bonkers, I meant it. The only other time I've seen this is in The Little Mermaid 2, Return to the Sea, where when Melody is singing for a moment, you briefly see her walking on her fins, but underwater. Hashtag justice for Melody. Thought I'd add that all the tails you see in this movie are CGI, and the CGI doesn't always look great. I will say, though, that the mermaid elder here has, like, the most gigantic, ridiculous, like, four-pronged fluke that I've ever seen. And I feel like I've seen this fluke before on, like, these tails on Wish and Amazon and what have you. And I wonder, like, from what I understand, I think a lot of those tails are made in China. And so I wonder if a lot of that has to do with the impact of this film. Remember what a huge deal this film was. And if that's the case, like, I don't know. That's kind of an interesting thing to make note of. I do think those tails look cool. I don't know how well they work as opposed to like different, like more rigid monofins, you know what I mean? Just because of like the shape of them. But they do look super cool. I will say that. Again, I don't think I'd see myself buying one of those unless it was maybe like for costume purpose. But again, interesting connection. Now, let's go back to that mermaid elder for a little bit. She's explaining the history of how mermaids evolved. And I feel like she gets into a little bit of like aquatic ape theory here about how merfolk were apes who lived underwater and evolved fishtails. She later explains that mermaids and humans should have been able to coexist. However, there's always a however, mermaids have always been hunted by humans. Girl, we know. Remember the last movie we watched in the Mermaid Movie Club? Scales, Mermaids Are Real? I still hear Siren Phillips in my dreams yelling, "Hunters!" And we haven't even gotten in a splash yet. But she's right. And that's probably the reason why mermaids have such a big secret to keep. I don't think there's any big overarching reason as to why mermaids are hunted. I think it just kind of depends on the movie, depends on the motivation of the individual. In the 13th year, it seemed like Big John just kind of wanted to show off Cody and or his mermama and just be like, "Hey, I wasn't crazy. Just letting you know, I wasn't crazy." And then in Scales, like we discussed in the last episode, Siren's being hunted for her magical mermaid blood that's supposed to help heal Adam's glass bones. Speaking of sirens, in both Siren and Splash, Donna and Madison respectively are being observed by researchers. Netflix Little Mermaid, she's a circus attraction. But again, Mermaid Elder is making a point. One of the points raised after Scales is, this is a common criticism I saw of Scales, if the mermaids are supposed to be able to heal humans, then why don't they? And I think the answer to that is, well, trust issues. How are the mermaids supposed to know that, like, if they, how am I trying to say this? Like, how do they know that they're not going to essentially be exploited? I think that's the point, to the point where they would essentially just be hunted. So I feel that's probably a really bad take, but I think it's just the mermaids kind of acting in their own best interest. Old mermaid lady here is literally spelling it out for you. They've always been hunted, and again, trust issues, I'm sure those are there. Short form answer, the human world, it's a mess. Thank you, Sebastian. Crab was always right. Now, from a mythology standpoint, there is a Chinese mermaid myth that mermaids were able to cry tears that turned into pearls. So for that reason, they were often pursued by fishermen. So maybe they could sell the pearls. And so that's extortion, first of all. But, you know, fairy tales are not always kind to us women. Life imitates art in that way. But, you know, I think about it and I'm like, if I could, like, open up an Etsy shop and just sell little bottles of sadness pearls I shed while watching Scrubs, you know, like the really heart-wrenching episodes of Scrubs like I've been watching lately, girl, I would be making bank on that. I'm a Scorpio and I cry all the time. It's just water sign stuff. I'd be like a self-mermaid millionaire. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just, like, I'm sitting there watching that one episode of Scrubs where Cox accidentally kills, like, 3 patients after, like, a bad organ transplant. Oh, that episode's heavy. And I would cry and cry and cry. But look, I'd have all these little bottles of pearls. And I could just sell all those little pearls. And I'd just be like making money. I don't know. It's a thought. And it also reminds me of this old Savage Garden song called Tears of Pearls that was likely not inspired by this myth, but just a song I really like. But I should probably get back to the movie before I go on a whole Savage Garden tangent. There is this octopus character who explains Sean's unique skill set. So it turns out her fluke was split down the middle. Okay, so we got mermaid body mods here. And she underwent intense training to be able to walk and dance on her fins. So she can kind of be like this cool mermaid spy. Like, that's kind of cool. At some point, he says, she dances better than McDonald. And another mermaid corrects him saying, don't you mean Madonna? He meant what he said. He like doubles down on McDonald. And I could not stop laughing. I love the humor in this movie. He further explains that Sean is essentially the trap. Like I said, spy mermaid sent out to seduce Lushan, and the other mermaids will carry out the plot to assassinate him. Mermaids with a vengeance. And that's what I'm talking about. So Sean finally gets her phone call from Lushan, which makes the merm squeal with glee. So he's got to pick up Sean on the way of getting Sean out of the hideout. Their way, the mermaid's way of getting Sean out of the hideout. I'm like, my train of thought is going crazy. I've got like a tiny dog next to me and she's distracting me. Their way of getting Sean out of the hideout is to literally catapult her out, which is super ridiculous and super ambitious, but it works. And our octopus is not far behind, along with one of the other mermaids who is almost like Sean's security guard or something. Now, I'm going to make a call back to Aquamarine here because Sean's got a human wardrobe, which is very similar to what she wears in the novel. Because in the novel, Aquamarine couldn't do the Madison thing and have legs when she was dry because that would have made it way too easy. Sorry, I'm not salty. In the Aquamarine novel, Aqua only has her tail, so she has to get creative. That involves putting her in a wheelchair in long skirts and dresses to cover up her tail and explain why she can't walk or dance. In Sean's case, she can't do that leg thing either, but her tail fins can act like legs. So she has a decent amount of mobility, but the tail is still there, so she needs to cover up. And like the Mermaid Elder implied, who knows what would happen if Lushan found out what Sean was. You just can't trust people with money. So after Sean poisons Lushan's manager, security whatever dude, she sets out to find Lushan himself. And oh my god, this whole scene, I was just like, this guy's like the worst boss ever. He throws things, he belittles those under him, he threatens them. Like, who would want to work for this dude under any circumstances? Like, you're a crappy businessman with a crappy John Waters mustache, but sure, go off. You've got all the monies. And there's a lot of slapstick here as Shawn manages to get like a door slammed in her face, multiple sea urchins stuck to her face, golf club to the head, all while she's trying to put the hit on Lushan. And then she finally gets Sean's attention, and he implies that he wasn't really serious about seeing her and tries to bribe her with money to send her on her way. But there's, again, this is again one of the funniest scenes in this entire movie. Lushan at some point asks her, like, what is your specialty? And she says, my breasts and thighs, which immediately cuts to a shot of Sean smiling, holding barbecue chicken on skewers. I just, like, the timing of that is just so funny. And because it's literally no music, she's just standing there like, chicken. There's no dialogue, there's no music, just crackling barbecue fire. So then later when the security guards are talking to Rulon and they leave her, they literally do somersaults out of the scene. Again, this film is bonkers and there's no real reason why they should be doing that, but who cares? I will note that there's a really interesting parallel coming out of the scene. So Rulon. It's like Rulon, and I feel like I'm accidentally saying Rulon because I'm talking too fast. So Rulon. She walks into the room as Lushan is walking out to go on his little date with Sean. The way Rulon walks past her and gives her the eyes makes me think that Rulon is like the Vanessa to Sean's Ariel. It's a thought. But if Rulon is going to be up against Sean, I don't like that it's about a dude, man. Like, it'd be one thing considering Rulon is already in cahoots with Lushan over the Green Gulf Project, which threatens Sean's people, so naturally they'd already be opposed. But now with Sean coming between Rulon and Lushan's relationship, and that's just... I hate this trope. Okay, I gotta move on, because I'm just like... So, it takes some barbecue chicken for Lushan to open up to Sean just a little bit. So, Sean takes this opportunity to make her case for a clean planet. Lushan is more concerned with money and drops a check for $1 million on her, and she promptly tosses it into the furnace. We stand an anti-capitalist mermaid icon. They bond a bit by singing Lushan's favorite song. I forgot to Google what this was. I'll probably mention it on Twitter somewhere. And that starts really nice, and then it suddenly gets like absolutely karaoke, and in context it's so weird because it makes no sense, because they're singing it in the middle of the amusement park very loudly. There's background, like backing music to it and everything. And they're just so loud, and I cannot imagine what it would be like seeing this in real life. And this is also the scene where we find out that Lushan's crappy John Waters mustache was fake the whole time. Thank Neptune, because that was ugly. They make it back to Sean's house, where the other merms, including the octopus, are ready to put that hit on Lushan. Sean seduces him as per the plan, but Sean enters alone because she couldn't stand the idea of killing him. Sound familiar? Anyone? Stephen Chow did claim that this was essentially his take on The Little Mermaid, as, you know, nearly any story about mermaids is, I guess. The way he interprets it, though, it's not backwards. It's not linear. He turns the tables in unexpected ways so that when you see something that's a bit more in line with the story, it's almost jarring. I'll go into detail, I think, toward the end on, like, how this story connects to Little Mermaid. But that, well, yeah, again, I'll save that for the end. Now, this scene is... also a little bit hard to deal with. It's not as gory, but it's a little bit body horror. Octopus Uncle returns as a teppanyaki chef, but he has to kind of cover up the fact that he's like Sicilian merman guy, and he has to have his own tentacles fried and cut in order to dispel any suspicions that anyone might have that he's a Sicilian merman guy. When you consider the fact that it's part of his own body, you're looking at it, he's cutting off parts of his own body just so that he doesn't blow his own cover and Sean's in the process. So he's brave, but man, poor Octopus Uncle. What happens after this, though, is kind of important. I want to point this out. Lushan tries to propose to Sean. That happened fast. She rejects his proposal, and he kind of negs her a little bit, because of course he does, and Sean reveals to him that she's supposed to kill him. Lushan's idea of solving this is by kissing her, because of course it is. Lushan is easily like the most obnoxious character in this movie because he's so self-centered. He's bragging about how quickly he makes business decisions as he's telling Sean how much he really loves her. Who does that? Probably a lot of characters now I'm thinking about it. Also, based off this scene, Sean does cry, but she does not cry pearls. So that was not a myth element that they used, but it was one that I wanted to point out. Because since we are talking about a Chinese movie, I wanted to mention some Chinese mythology in here. And I think there's a little bit more coming up. So, now Octopus is trying to figure out why Sean keeps failing to kill Lushan, Lushan actually winds up at the house, the Little Mermaid safe house, another mermaid safe house. There's always mermaid safe house. And inadvertently discovers the other mermaids, including Shan, in full tail mode, standing right in front of him. An octopus, who is for some reason hanging from the ceiling fan, because this guy can't catch a break. In the process, Octopus sentences him to the 18th level of hell. And I'm like, wait, where do the other 9 levels come from? I don't know if that's like a Chinese thing, but last time I checked, there were only like 9 levels of hell or something. Octopus orders Shan to kill Lushan with this knife that she's been carrying throughout the whole movie, and she can't. This is important. Remember, I mentioned Little Mermaid earlier and how this connects. Her sisters in the movie, but in the original story of Little Mermaid, her sisters give her a knife from the sea witch, with which she can kill the prince, let his blood wash over her feet, and grow her tail back. The whole concept of Shan carrying the knife with her throughout the film is such an interesting tie back to The Little Mermaid, and one that's often overlooked in favor of the general mermaid-human romantic plot device. And this is kind of where it kind of sucks, like on an emotional level. Shan is just, she's so conflicted with herself. She's sobbing, like, the conflict is palpable. On one hand, she can't bring herself to kill Lushan because she's found herself in love with him. But on the other, she feels like she's betrayed her people by not killing him. So she's at war with herself. And I don't know. I feel bad because like she's torn between the thing that she really, really loves and doing what's right for herself and her family. Families, I guess. I don't know. Poor Shan. So now Lushan has to explain to the authorities what he saw. And I gotta say, I gotta hand it to these guys for creativity. The kinds of mermaids that they draw are nothing like what we're used to, and it's supposed to be a gag. You can tell these guys have never seen a mermaid movie in their life. Their lives, I should say. But what's so interesting is that the first doodle this cop comes up with greatly resembles what's called the Ling Yu, which is recorded in the Chinese text Shan Hai Jing, or the Classic of Mountains and Seas, which was a collection of Chinese myths and beasts. And among them is the Ling Yu, which is described as having a human face and a fish body. I'll link more about Shan Hai Jing in the show notes, in addition to another article that describes more Chinese mermaid legends, but this one was worth noting due to its tie back to the movie. This is what we do here on the Mermaid Movie Club, obviously. The mer, you know. I think we gotta make a segment out of that or something, because I just really like how that sounds. Naturally, the cops think Lushan is crazy, because that is a crazy story. Nobody believes what Lushan saw, but of course nobody would believe him. However, it looks like Lushan is having a change of heart, which I personally never saw coming. And because of it, he's starting to move away from Ruolan and potentially away from the Green Gulf Project. So Ruolan, who has a 45% stake in the project, is naturally unhappy. Lushan wants to turn off the sonar, and I'm sure it's to protect the mermaids he just met, but he claims... He claims it's because he crapped his pants while testing the sonar for himself. It's toilet humor. And I laughed at it anyway. What are you going to do about it? With Ruolan in agreement, they turn off the sonar. But Ruolan has another trick up her very, very glamorous, probably very expensive sleeve. Okay, quick note about Ruolan. Ruolan, when you see her, she's always just like drop dead gorgeous. Like, I'm just like, wow, she's really pretty. And she's always dressed so expensive. Like, like I said, she's probably got money because she's investing in Green Gulf. Like, I think what happens is like she's splitting it 45 to whatever the other half is. I'm not good at math. So, yeah. She's very glamorous. So Lushan reveals to her what he saw. He reveals that he saw mermaids, but she's one of the few who doesn't laugh at him or dismiss him. In fact, she has a clamshell of her own to drop on Lushan, in that she's been funding a mermaid research project for quite some time. And what's more, now they know where to find the mermaids, and Ruolan is feeling both vengeful and hungry because she's going to make a fish soup out of Shan. Okay, again. Ruolan, going to talk about Ruolan again. She's scary. Girl is scary. Like, she goes from, like, part of her is, like, very seductive. She's definitely trying to seduce Lushan in some way. And that's, like, you can see that in the scene before, I think it's the one before they turn off the sonar, before he says he crapped his pants. And because she's in bed, like, no, don't worry about mermaids or whatever this is. Just come here with me. And he's like, no, I got to do this. And you can tell she's miffed. Now, again, she's scary. She goes from being a very, very beautiful snake to a full-on military commander as she sends a fleet of ships to the wreck where the mermaids are hiding. Like, that was fast. And she's settling into her new role as the big bad quite comfortably. When the scientists descend on the mermaid hideout, I got horrible flashbacks to the hunters from Scales when they found Siren's house. Now, like I said, where there are mermaids, there are hunters. This film is no exception. The difference being that in this film, these hunters have full-on assault rifles. Suddenly, the hunters from Scales look like Steve Irwin. There is some gore in this scene. It is really, really gross. There's blood. A lot of it. Mermaids are being shot, clubbed, beaten to a pulp. Sean barely escapes a huge hook to the face, but this girl knows how to make an escape. And I was quite thankful that she could. Because, again, what I was seeing, I was like, I pretend I do not see it. And so there's a lot of action stuff happening here, and I don't want to get too much into it because there's already a lot that I've covered for this movie. And I'm not really good at describing action. And also, this is really, really violent because there's guns and blood. And I've already talked enough about guns and blood. I will talk, however, about how the mermaid elder creates a massive tsunami with her fluke and knocks out some of the scientists because that's cool. That was cool as crap. And as we know, the sea is a cruel mistress. So a lot of those guys probably drowned. Also, we do run into the mermaid museum costume guy from the beginning, and he hesitantly snaps a shot of battle-worn Sean. And I'm just going to say, he hasn't given up the gig yet, so you do you. And why does this scene remind me of Lilo and Stitch? I don't know why. Because I'm thinking he's the fat guy with the ice cream, but he's usually not the one taking pictures. Usually it's Lilo taking the pictures, and then the ice cream falls. What does it remind me of? There's a really, really specific thing it reminds me of. And if you've seen this movie, please tell me what it reminds you of, because it reminds me of something really, really specific, and I just can't put my finger on it. Anyway, now, where on earth is Lu Xun in all of this mess? Stuck in traffic. Where else? Yeah, I felt that. For once, Lu Xun can't win. But he does run into a guy we met earlier who had a jetpack. There was, before the scene at the party, I didn't cover this because I thought it was like kind of extraneous. There's a scene at, I think, Lu Xun's like mansion, and he's there with, I don't know if they're shareholders or I don't really remember who they are, but one of the guys has a jetpack. He is like criticizing Lu Xun over this whole thing, and I'm like so incoherent in this episode, like I can't even tell you. He is trying to like escape with a jetpack, and then the jetpack kind of backfires. So we meet this guy again, and yeah, there are jetpacks. I told you it was wild. So jetpack guy gives Lu Xun his jetpack, and that jetpack gets him back to Green Gulf just before Ruolan can have Sean killed and get her revenge on the mermaid that stole her man. Sean is essentially dying at this point, and Lu Xun does his best to send her back out to sea before it's too late. Oh man, I'm just thinking about like what Aquamarine could have been if it was closer to the novel. I know I made a whole thing like, oh, it doesn't have to be so close to the novel because accuracy is overrated. It would have been cool to see, at least. Now, fortunately, like Haley and Claire in the novel, Lu Xun, oh, and they were successful in the movie as well, I should say that too. So fortunately, Lu Xun is successful, and Sean returns to the sea. Ruolan and the rest of the scientists are arrested, and wait, it's not over yet. We're not done yet. We're at this really nice seaside abode here where Lu Xun is meeting with a young marine biologist by the name of Long Janfei. Janfei is played by Chris Wu, who is a popular Chinese actor and rapper and former member of Korean Chinese boy band EXO. I really should knock into an EXO tangent here, but I'll be honest. I found out about this movie because I saw that he was in it, and I was like, whoa, hey, Chris Wu in a mermaid movie? Too great taste to taste like something I would like. The scene is great, though, because we see a reformed Lu Xun, who's donated all his money to conservation efforts. He denies the existence of the mermaids, despite Janfei having a picture of Sean from that fateful day, presumably the picture the mermaid costume guy took, which makes me wonder what the connection is there. I'm assuming maybe Janfei is like his son or nephew or something. And then we meet Lu Xun's wife, Lucy, who, number one, looks a lot like Sean, sounds a lot like Sean, and walks like her legs are stuck together. It's almost as if she's Sean or something. I'll let you figure that out for yourself. Point is, they live happily ever after, and so do the rest of mermaids, in their home, under the sea. With no Green Gulf Project, no sonar, no more blood and guts and gore, no more hunters, no more Rulon. Everybody's happy. And that, dear friends, is the mermaid. As you exit the ride, please watch your step and take small children by the hand. Not that you should have small children while watching an R-rated movie, but I can't tell you what to do. Either way, that's it. That's the movie. So, as I do with every movie on this show, I break it down into three things that I loved, three things I didn't love as much. Friendly reminder, I do not have a rating system anymore. As of the last episode, Scales Mermaids Are Real, I don't do that anymore. I just didn't think it was productive. I mentioned that already. So this is what I do. So beginning with the pros. I said it 1,000 times, but this movie is wild and unapologetically so. It's off the wall and so sure of itself. And when I say that, I don't mean it's cocky. Cocky is J.J. Abrams doing Star Wars and dropping all these little callbacks to the original trilogy. Like he's saying like, hey, remember Emperor Palpatine? Remember Lando Calrissian? Maybe we'll like, you know, bring him back. How about we do that? Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. To be fair, I'm a bag of references myself, so maybe I'm the mermaid calling the trout fishy, but I just, like, going back and watching The Rise of Skywalker a couple days ago, I was just like, he really did that. And, like, how Rian Johnson, I don't even want to get into this whole J.J. Abrams, Rian Johnson thing, because that's totally off topic here, but how Rian Johnson didn't lean into that whole nostalgia of it all, but J.J. Abrams does every time. I'm salty. I'm sorry. I'm very salty. Now, another example is cocky is in Avengers Endgame, where I'm sure Kevin Feige and the Russo brothers patted themselves on the back, as I just did now, for that all-female lineup shot. Like, look, we have women. We have all these women. We have like female characters. We have actual females. This scene is to let you know that we have women. And they're like all teaming up because women support each other. Hashtag girl power, hashtag girl boss, hashtag the future is female. Okay. If you wanted to know what the commodification of feminism looks like, it's that scene. Look, I'm sure that scene was well-intentioned. I'm sure it was. And, you know, I'm all for the concept of women supporting women. But that whole scene, like, it just felt like that exactly. It felt like the equivalent of a Target mug that says, hashtag girl boss. I like the idea of it, but when you realize it's a major blockbuster film by a huge entertainment conglomerate that has merchandise to push, it leaves a sour taste in my mouth. You know what I mean? So that's what I'm saying, that the mermaid is not. When I say it's sure of itself, I mean it knows what it is. It's confident in its weirdness. It doesn't try too hard to be anything else. It's weird. It's a weirdo. It doesn't fit in, and it doesn't want to fit in. I hate that I just made that reference. Like, now look who's J.J. Abrams. I'm just such a hypocrite. But you get what I'm saying. It's weird. It's fresh. It's an unusually comedic take on mermaids. Yes, I know Splash is a comedy. Miranda is a comedy. Aquamarine is a comedy. But the comedy in The Mermaid is so bizarre and irreverent that it's hard to compare it to those films for me. Like, the slapstick elements are so expertly executed. The visual gags are great. Like, there's this one, I didn't mention this one earlier, but there's this one where the octopus is like stuffing all but one of his tentacles into a pair of pants, and it just so happens to pop out of the fly. And I'll just let you visualize that for yourself, but I was rolling laughing. It was just so freaking funny. Point being, you can go into something expecting something else that you get. You can get so much more than you expect. That's what I love about this movie. That was a long point. And I went off on a lot of tangents, but I had a lot to say. Number two, there's so many different kinds of mers in this movie that it's really refreshing. They're not all just pretty with long flowing hair. There's the octopus guy with the yellow braids. One of them constantly wears a shower cap. One has a unibrow. Some of them are a bit chubby. Look, I love this. I always love when someone can kind of bend the, in this case, unwritten rules on mermaids. Sean is probably the closest thing to a more traditional, more marketable mermaid in this movie. And even then, she really is far from traditional. So I really have to hand it to this movie for such an interesting cast of mers, especially in recent months when we've been debating around Halle Bailey as far as what a mermaid looks like. And with that, here's a Xandria hot take. Ready for this? Mythical creatures are mythical and therefore open to interpretation and can look any way you want them to. That's what I'm all about, and that's what this movie took to heart, and just another reason why I hold it to such a high regard. It's not hard to just have mermaids look different, and there's nothing wrong with it. You can just kind of take the rule book, burn it, and do whatever you want. It's quite easy. Number three, this movie had a strong environmental overtone, which is not always the case with mermaid media. I've seen like a few like smaller mermaid films that kind of leaned into the environmental overtone. There was the Three Tails movie that used to be on Netflix a while ago, and now it's not there. But a lot of mermaid films, for the most part, will be rooted in romance, or they'll have like a coming of age element, like the last two films we covered, or it'll even have a horror element, like say She Creature or Blew My Mind, or what was the other one I talked about? The Lure. In this case, what we have is an action movie with a little bit of romance and a strong environmental element, and then a lot of comedy. It's a bit more chaotic than just a cutesy slogan on a sticker on someone's hydro flask. It's like, take care of our ocean, or we'll kill you. Please listen to the mermaids. It's a strong message to the point where Lushan does a full 180. Crazy. Thinking about the way he was. Do I owe Dua Lipa royalties now? Anyway, if it's enough for a playboy idiot like Sean to have a change of heart and be a completely different character by the end, that's got to be worth something. And that's another thing I really liked. I guess I'm just making this into a fourth. I love the character development that Lushan has. It's because it's positive character development. He goes from, like, you don't think that he's going to have that kind of development based on where he is. But again, that's like a full 180. Not 179, not like 154, I'm bad at math, I'm bad at geometry, a full 180, and I think that is super cool. So, here are the things I did not love quite as much, and for this movie, it's hard just because it's one that you really, really, really have to suspend disbelief for, even for a mermaid movie, just because of how nuts it is, but I really try to be fair, so here it goes. Number one, I think the special effects were awkward at times. Like, Sean's tail looked weird, and of course, it's not always going to look perfect. I know. And maybe that has a bit to do with the fact that she's walking on her fins, which is unusual in itself. And it probably requires a particular way to do the tail, rather than how we've seen it in other productions that use CGI tails. But it was a bit jarring. Crazy special effects seem to be a trademark of Stephen Chow films, as Kung Fu Hustle uses them fairly generously, particularly effects where people are, like, flying through the air. But then you've got like flying mermaids defying all laws of physics, flopping around through the air, and I'm applying logic to mermaids, so I should probably just get to my next point before I go too deep. Number two. My goodness. This film gets gory. It's all the stuff I mentioned at the top in the content warning with the brutalized fish, the goldfish getting blown up by the creepy assistant with the sonar, octopus cutting off his own tentacles, grilling them on a teppanyaki grill. Oh, golly gosh. And of course, need I even mention the scene where the hunters find the mermaid hideout and start shooting them? That's a lot. Like, assault rifles, you guys. Like, oh gosh. Look, okay, if gore and gun violence is your thing, sure, whatever. But it's not for me. I'm just going to come out and say that. Not into it. Number three, and this is a big one for me. I really did not care for the love triangle with Sean, Lushan, and Ruolan. I especially did not care for the implied Ruolan-Sean rivalry based on the fact that Sean was getting involved with Lushan. It's so tired. They're already opposed, and that's pretty apparent. Ruolan is part of the Green Gulf Project, like 45% investment or whatever. That's ultimately a threat to Sean's people. That's already opposition right there. So I guess that element may have just been a tie back into The Little Mermaid, but the way it's executed is just, I don't know. I don't care about it. I already don't care about romantic plots in particular. I never have. I won't say I never will. But especially when it's two women going against each other over a dude, honestly, not for it. It's old. A lot of movies, romances or otherwise, are built on this trope, and it's another one that I hate so much. Like I said, Ruolan and Sean were already on opposing sides, so this detail felt unnecessary. Maybe it just kind of added to the tension with them. And in that case, I guess. But I just, again, it was one of those things where I felt like it was just kind of, it didn't need to be there. Speaking of The Little Mermaid, and I said I was going to bring this up. So This movie is essentially Chow's take on The Little Mermaid, but again, it's not exactly linear. He takes all these elements of the original story, not the movie, not the Disney movie, and he basically interprets them whenever and however he likes. You have the mermaid, Shan, and the human lover, Lu Shan. You have the other woman, which by all means should be Ruolan, but based on how she gets involved with Lu Shan, that kind of ends up being Shan. But at the end of the day, Shan is the protagonist, and Ruolan is very much an antagonist, so it's up for debate, I guess. Shan carries a knife with her to kill Lu Shan with, which goes back to the part in the original story where the mermaids cut their hair in exchange for a knife with which she would kill the prince and get her tail back. But Shan doesn't seem to have a fascination with the surface world like the original mermaid in Anderson's story, or even like Ariel. She's still very much part of that world, but only when she needs to be, it seems. Oh, yeah, and there's a Sicilian merman guy. That's about as close to Ursula as we get, y'all. But instead of a fat evil sea witch, he's a chaotic, good, buff octomerm with yellow braids. And they don't look very good. It's easy to compare literally any movie centered around mermaids to Little Mermaid, regardless of how similar they are, but this one really does feel like an inspired take. Overall, I'm going to say this movie is pure fun, a good laugh, and highly imaginative. And with its environmental message, that can only make it better. I've said it a billion times before, and I'll say it again, it is one of my all-time favorites, and I honestly cannot recommend it enough. now, if you did not watch this beforehand, and you want to watch it now that I've talked about it, you can watch it, you can rent it on Amazon Prime Video, Vudu, YouTube, iTunes, and Google Play. I actually recorded it on my DVR like in 2018, and that was how I watched it. I'm just going to come out and say that. I'm utter garbage. But you can watch it however you see fit. If you have it on DVD, you want to grab it on DVD, you can totally do that. It's not like the 13th year where it's like totally impossible to find the DVD of it. It was a huge hit movie. So you're going to be able to find it on home video in some format. So there it is. The Mermaid. Stephen Chow. 2016. Watch it. Please. I cannot tell you enough how much I love this movie. All right. So that kind of does it for the main discussion. And I'm going to start wrapping it up here. Before I go, again, I just want to say thank you for being so patient as I took my time with this episode. I know it's been like a month after the Scales episode, and this one feels a lot shorter than the Scales episode because I tried to pare it down a little bit because I was talking for like an hour by myself over Scales, and it was a lot. So again, I'm developing things, I'm trying to get things just right, and we're still in the middle of the coronavirus stuff. We're still being quarantined, although Florida is right now in the process of gradually reopening. My job has just reopened. I've not been called back to it yet. We'll see how that goes. But the main thing that kind of caused this delay was, at the beginning of May, the beginning of May, like literally 1st of May, my uncle passed away, and it was something that we all kind of knew was happening, but we had no idea it was going to be as fast as it was. Now, I don't want to get into the awful details of it, as I do try to keep the show positive, but it was literally a case of we said goodnight to him, within 5 hours he was gone. It was nothing related to coronavirus. I'm just going to get that one out of the way, but it's something we've all been having to deal with. We've needed to be there for my mother, who grapples with the loss of her brother, who she's known all her life and been super close to. And then my dad lost like a super close friend in him. So it's been a rough time, but we're all here for each other. You know, I'm really, really close to my siblings. I have a twin sister and I have three brothers, two of which are adopted. And I really honestly could not imagine life without them. And that's the reality my mom has to live with now. And it just makes me really, really cherish the relationships I have with my family, like a lot more. And so I've been trying to spend more time with them. And so that's kind of why I took my time with it. But also, as for why I stepped back into it, I felt like I needed to do another episode. It was like I said, it's been like a month. I really needed something familiar, something irreverent, something that would make me smile in all this uncertainty and grief. So that was why I picked the film that I did. And again, I've just been wanting to cover it, and now just seemed like the time. Anyway, what I'm trying to say is, even if right now is a bad time to hug your loved ones, at least make sure to let them know you love them, because there's never a bad time for that. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to post-episode Zandria for the closer. Thanks again, folks. Love y'all. Take it away. Thanks for tuning in to the Mermaid Movie Club for this discussion of The Mermaid. Please be sure to stay tuned to all my socials to find out what our next selection will be. I'm Mermaids Andrea, all one word, on Twitter and Instagram. Be sure to message me with all your thoughts, and you can even leave a voice message if you're using the Anchor app. Be sure to subscribe on the streaming app of your choice and tell all your mer friends about the show. And be sure to rate and leave a review on Apple Podcasts. In the meantime, this has been Mermaids Andrea. Have a mermaid-amazing day and a fantastic tomorrow. Love you, fishies, forever.